Oh, I was in surgery almost every day.
Did you have to put the gloves on and stuff?
Well,
the doctor allowed you.
You're not supposed to touch it. Not supposed to touch anything blue, right?
So I don't know. I don't go in surgery rooms very often.
I've been in them, but only knocked out.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Seller diehards, welcome back to another great episode of Sell or Die. I'm Jen Gleckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling. And you're about to experience one of the most amazing podcasts on the internet. The amazing Sell or Die, the number one rated show on
the business section of Overcast.
Of Overcast.com. Download it onto your iPhone because it doesn't exist on an Android. And try to rate us a little bit or
just
subscribe.
Give us a star.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. Click the star button and we win.
Let's get into the meat here. I don't want to beg for approval until we've actually earned it. So we're going to talk today to the great Jeff Bajorek about prospecting and what we can learn from his. He's a lethal prospector, almost as good as Jeb Blunt, but not, you know, he's in the same category. I really like the guy. I think he's a wonderful up-and-coming sales expert.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And you're smart, very smart
family
guy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he lives in Detroit, but there's not that many people there anymore. So he actually is one of the mayoral candidates, I think. We're going to talk about stuff that happens on the road.
Yeah, so before we get into our interview with Jeff Bajorek with a B.
With a B, right.
We are going to talk about what you can do to maximize or improve your road time.
Mm-hmm. Road time or travel time?
Your travel time.
So you're flying someplace or you're driving someplace? Ooh. Let's do both. Let's do a little road, a little fly.
Right.
Okay.
You're just on the road, so like it doesn't really matter because some people fly, some people drive.
The worst thing that a salesperson can do is try to get ready while they're in the car.
Like put on makeup?
No. That's a girly thing. I'm talking about try to read something on your phone.
You're driving?
Right.
Isn't people, that like not
It's not allowed? Like illegal? Listen, salespeople do everything. But the best thing you can do is pull over. and at least try to prepare yourself before you arrive. And then arrive early. My mentor, the late, great Earl Pertnoy, said if you're not a half an hour early, you're late. You get there in plenty of time so you can review and tweak anything that you've tried to think about when you're in the car.
Well, you know what the interesting thing is if you arrive late, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Is the entire time, like, you see you're going to be 10 minutes late on the GPS. So now you start thinking, oh, no, I'm going to be late. Then you start thinking, oh, shit, I'm late.
No, you just
And then
call
you
the
get
person.
In there. Oh, yeah, you call the person. But, like, I don't like being late. So when I am late, because sometimes that does happen, I'm, like, freaking out about being late. And it takes away. I'm not
How long
late
have we
for
known
customers.
Each other? How long have we known each other?
Three plus years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have I ever been late?
Well, that one time.
Have I ever been late? No, I'm not late. I make it my point to wake up earlier than most people, and I respect other people's time, so I'm not late. But
all I'm saying is if you do arrive late, your focus is totally taken off, and it's not on where you need to be about winning the customer.
Right, you're all apologetic about the traffic
arriving
or the
late.
You know, some
exactly,
lie that you've told about why you're late. Okay,
well, yeah.
But let me share this with you. If you have a thought while you're in your car, text it to yourself, voice to text. That's the safest way to be able to give yourself a message and a reminder so that when you arrive, you haven't forgotten the thought, number one. And number two, you have given yourself the message safely.
I've seen a bunch of people who have those pads that are like those cushion thing, the suction cupped onto mm-hmm. their, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know, the
You're
front
the
part
dashboard.
Of the...
the dashboard part.
Yeah. And... I'm at a loss for words today.
I got you.
Anyway, they have a pen in the cup holder and they just write it down. I mean, either works. You know, however you're going to do it, don't forget it, I guess is your point.
I'm hoping that all of you, if you're traveling from call to call, are prepared for every single call that you make before you start on the road. that you've had your morning cup of coffee with a customer, which is huge before you begin the travel process, because that puts you in the right frame of mind. You're meeting with someone, it's a positive thing, now you get in your car and you're ready to roll, and you're prepared so you're not nervous about where it is that you're going. The more prepared you are, the less nervous you are.
Okay, can I jump in with one?
Yeah, sure.
So I used to be a sales manager.
Oh, that's a great one. Oh.
So I used to be a sales manager for 10 people nationwide, and I was on the road 5 to 6 days a week.
Yeah, on an airplane, though.
On an airplane. Every day I'd wake up in a different time zone, a different city. I had no idea where I was or what time it was.
Mm-hmm.
And every plane, or what it seemed like every plane, was late. Okay, and you're sitting in delays. And so one of my recommendations is expect that the plane is going to be late.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go in there with the mindset and the attitude that it's going to be late, and you're okay with it because you have things to do, maybe you're watching or taking lessons on the Gitomer Learning Academy, maybe you're catching up on emails, reading a book, whatever it may be, listening to music. If you go in with that mentality, then you won't get upset when it's late. You'll be happy when it's on time.
Start your day with everything plugged in and fully charged. Bring with you a power cord and a phone charger.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're a moron.
So you guys are talking about this sort of great concept, which is, you know, work with what you can control, charge
right.
your devices,
mm-hmm.
accept
exactly.
what you cannot control.
Yeah, that's very good, Dad.
And
that's
if you
exactly
accept it,
it,
then your attitude will stay right, and you'll still be positively prepared for whatever the inevitability is,
mm-hmm.
or the inevitable is. I'm a big proponent of when I arrive at a place, when I'm getting off of the airplane, I'm a happy guy. I'll eat a little something to get my metabolism right.
Wait. You eat. I love this about you. Okay, so I'm gonna let our diehards in on a little secret here. You eat based on the city you're in.
Correct.
So if you're in Chicago, you go get deep dish pizza.
Right.
Or
Garrett's popcorn.
Right. Or the Italian place that
Gene
you like.
And Giorgetti's.
There you go.
Right.
If you're in Philly, you go get a cheesesteak. But whatever it is, you make it fun.
Right. I have places because I've been most places. So I go to the places where I know have the best of the best.
If
for me,
you're in New York, it's an egg bagel.
If I'm in New York, you're correct. It's an egg bagel. But
see how much I know.
But you find the other places. Like we've just been going to Brookfield Place,
mm-hmm.
and they have a gourmet food court, and it's pretty good. So we'll eat there.
Yeah, a meal is like $20 in the food court per
right.
person.
And why do you do that, Jeffrey?
Because it makes me feel good. And
well, I think it.
It's satisfying. If I'm on the road, first of all, I'm in a place where I don't live. So I have a degree of discomfort. I want to get as comfortable as fast as I possibly can. So I'm going to eat food that's comfortable to me. Well, it's not on my diet. Screw your diet.
What?
You're on the road. Have a good time. But no drinking, no partying. Stay sober. Stay clear. And deliver value.
Well, honey, Jeffrey Gitomer told me I could ease my diet on the road.
Right, exactly. So have them call me.
I don't think that's going to work.
Our office number is 704-333-1112, and you can have honey call me on your diet.
Yeah, but Jeffrey, one of the reasons you eat, and maybe it's not one of the reasons you eat the food of the city that we're going to, I think is because you want to make it fun.
I do want to make it fun.
And I think a lot of salespeople, and I know I got into this sort of routine when I was in a different city every day,
mm-hmm.
is you wake up, you go to your meeting, your bag is already packed and left in the lobby or in the rental car, you go back to the airport, you go to the next place, and it's routine. And at some point, then you're like not even seeing the cities you're in, you're just seeing the airports.
Well, that's if you don't have much time in between travel things to do. You have to do at least one thing. You got to eat.
But there is time.
So I'm going to
eat. It's just about allocating that time. And if you show up already prepared, then you know, if you do the things that you just recommended, you can make that time.
I know, just as an example, if I'm flying to Dallas and switching planes, that there's a Dickie's Barbecue at gate C6 and gate A18. And I will plan my entire process around running from the plane to the nearest Dickies, getting what is known as a mess of barbecue, and then running to my.
This is very true. So
and
if
running
you ever
want to
meet with Jeffrey, maybe suggest C6 or A18.
And yeah, so I get on the plane and I start eating right away, so that when all the people are walking by me, you know, it's like I'm giving them the food
He's
finger.
He's that guy.
Oh, man, yeah.
He's that guy.
Where'd you get that?
I got the store. Like, you can get it.
The last time I was on a flight, we were on the runway for an hour, and about 45 minutes in, dude beside me opens up this hot beef sandwich, and it was...
Did he offer you any?
No.
No, of course not.
I was sick to my stomach after that. I wasn't going to eat. I was about to vomit.
Oh, man. So we have a really great interview coming up today with Jeff Pejoric.
That's a great segue.
I almost forgot about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, can't forget about it.
You're right, though, Jen. As a lifetime traveler with millions of miles, I enjoy every aspect of it. I enjoy every element of it. I don't gripe about the plane being late or delayed. I don't care about the weather. It's snowing. It's hot. I don't care. I'm there for me. I'm there for my customer or for my prospective customer, and I'm there to have a good time. And I do it no matter if my ass falls off.
Well, there you have it. Bingo. I challenge you
to do the same doggone thing.
All right, so Jeff Pejoric challenges us to rethink the way you sell. That's actually the title of his new ebook that's out.
So where do I get that? Do I go to jeffpejoric.com?
Yeah, you can get a copy just by going to jeffpejoric.com and clicking.
B-A-J-O-R-E-K.
B-A-J-O-R-E-K, that's correct.
.com. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and it's just on his website, I think under resources maybe.
Yeah, good guy. Really, really good guy and smart guy. And you'll learn a lot from him. So what I think we should do, why don't you talk about what he talks about, because you know him a little bit better than I do, I think.
Well, Jeff's going to give you actionable strategies that you can take and improve your selling process.
Yeah, especially in the area of prospecting and building your pipeline. Before we get to our interview today, I want to take a second to tell you about a service that I absolutely love, and it can help your business. It's called Owler.
Owler is the crowdsourced competitive intelligence platform that a million business professionals use to outsmart their competition, gain competitive insights, and uncover the latest industry news and alerts.
And here's the best part. If you sign up for free, you can follow me on Owler and automatically get my latest sales tips and videos, along with insights relevant to your business. Go to Owler.com, and in the search box, you type in Buy Gittimer, then just click on the yellow star and follow me. Owler is completely free to use and valuable. Come on, follow me. Go to Owler.com today.
Yep.
So without further ado, please help us welcome a real diehard, the great Jeff Pejoric.
Rather than just running an automated program with every sales call we make, we should actually think about who we're talking to. We should think about what we want to say to them. We should think about how they're going to receive what it is that we're saying to them. And ultimately, given that interaction, given the feedback and response we get from those touch points, then we can take another course of action. I think that since everything has been digitized lately, or digitized apparently, depending on what part of the country you're from.
Yeah, whether you're George Bush or not.
You know, everything, now that we have all this technology, we want to utilize it. And I believe that sometimes it gets overutilized and we have stuff that is over automated and you lose the connection between you and your prospect at that point. And I think that selling's about connecting at its core.
It's about email versus video. If you're going to try to communicate with somebody and not be there directly. Today, we had a prospect and I decided to make a video to send to them, and I could have just as easily sent an email.
Sure.
I could have just said, hey, let's connect. And they would have connected with me.
Right.
But I can promise you the video will be memorable. So how do you do this in a way that if you're not face-to-face, that you're doing something that the person goes, that was pretty damn cool.
It's certainly not by sending out a blast form email to 1,000 of your prospects with a homogenized message. And, you know, those tools are there for a reason and they're very valuable. And I'm not going to say that I don't use any automation. I do use some automation, but when I'm using an automated kind of a system or when I'm using an automation for it's some follow-up or whatever it is. Like with my ebook, I tell you right away, right after you download the ebook, hey, you're going to get four messages from me over the next 10 days. And in those messages, there's going to be something else that I think you're going to get something out of. Mm-hmm. And then after that, hey, here's my newsletter if you want to opt in or if you want to opt out of it or whatever it is. But you know it's going to be automated. That knows or that means that not only does it save me the work, but you know what you can expect. And I think that managing expectations is as big a part of selling as anything else.
That's pretty cool. So you have this amazing ebook, and I want to get really deep into it and learn a lot more about it. But before we do, I'd like to back up just a little bit and find out, how did you get into selling? And did you wake up and think
and
you'd always be a salesperson?
Anyway?
Or
how did you get into our place?
You know, where did it come from?
Someone told me that I should try it.
Ooh.
And I gave it a shot.
Are you still in touch with that person?
I am not.
Wow.
I wonder
only
if they're
because
listening.
I haven't. Probably not. No, it's funny. And I was.
Let's call that guy and thank him.
Yeah, should we get them on the phone?
Yeah.
We should definitely get Rose on the phone, and we should tell her thank you for suggesting that I get into this crazy profession.
Cool.
But it was 12 years ago, actually. I was working in the medical field, and in between jobs, really. It was
That's
kind of a unique situation where I gave 4 months notice before I left the job.
Whoa.
Without a real plan where I was going next. But I knew I was hireable. I knew I would be able to do something. And it was suggested to me that I take a look at this sales position. And I was the first one to say, that's not me. I'm
what
not
held you back from going into sales?
Never had any real positive experience with a salesperson prior to that, or very few anyway. A lot of it came with the biases that came along with my family.
Get a real job.
Get a real job would probably be the main one.
No, it wasn't so much get a real job. It was just we didn't have a whole lot of inherent trust in salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they were slimy.
Yeah. When you Google you do a Google image search for sales guy, right? A lot of things come up, and that is a pretty good
pulse.
What
about sales girl?
You know what? There's not as many. There's not as many images. I've done the same thing because as I present to a lot of my clients and the people that I work with, they don't identify with salespeople for the same reason that I didn't 12 years ago.
Hey, hold on. We fall victim to that because when he said he had a major influence of somebody, we thought that it was a guy. A rose by any other name was name's Fred. Turns out her name was Rose. And that was just our mental image was, Jeff's a guy. We assumed that the person who broached him with this sales subject was a guy.
Mm-hmm. And when you do the Google image search, you do that same thing for saleswoman. The images are not as stark. Which is a really interesting kind of fact to think about it that way. But when you think about the traditional archetype of a salesperson in this culture specifically, and you do the Google image search to kind of confirm your own suspicions, maybe you wouldn't be surprised with what you see. But that was what I always thought of. And I said, I'm not the pushy person. I'm not going to try to get you to act. I'm not going to twist your arm. I'm not going to ask you what's it going to take to get you in this fine used automobile today. You know, it's one of those things where I wanted to serve people, and I didn't think that selling was about service until I actually started.
You think of that slightly overweight guy who's about 5'9" tall that has a pinky ring and painted nails, you know, from his manicure. I got a deal for you. Come here.
Mustard stain on the tie.
Yeah.
And maybe a receding hairline.
Unfortunately,
that stereotype is what you have in your mind, but it's fading. And it's fading quickly.
And it has to, and I'm glad that it's fading, and it's from the work that a lot of people, like what you two are doing in terms of giving value first, providing a service, solving problems, and the tide has really changed over the last 5 to 10 years, probably more quickly than prior to that. But
do you think it's fading partially because people now have a choice? They can bypass the salesperson or opt to go to a store and connect with a salesperson?
I think so. I think that the digitization of all of the commerce, and you think about Amazon.com, we were talking earlier, why would I talk to a sales guy? I can prime it. It'll be at my house in 2 days. And you know what? If I don't like it, I'll send it back. I don't even have to talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain avoidance of that. But I think ultimately what that does is it shifts the role of the salesperson in a non-Amazon environment to where the salesperson is responsible for teaching the prospect something that they didn't know. We have to act not only only as a trainer, as an educator, but as a teacher. And you have to be able to explain a possibility, create a picture, paint a picture to create an outcome that the prospect doesn't know exists. And therefore, that possibility would not exist without you, which is where you, as the salesperson, provide value to the entire transaction. If you know what you want, then go get it. The fact of the matter is, me as a salesperson, I need to show people stuff that they are not aware of. I need to create possibilities in their mind before they create them themselves.
Keep this in mind. The consumer who is listening right now and saying to themselves, well, that's not going to change that much. I like to go to the department store. I like to go to the place. There's going to be 1,000 department stores closing this year. And they're closing for a reason. And the reason is that people don't have a great experience when they go to those places, would rather sit at home in their pajamas and order something online, knowing it's going to come in a couple of days. Do you order stuff online?
Yeah.
Do you order stuff online?
All the time.
Exactly. Everyone orders stuff online, and that's why they're closing down. There'll be some that'll stay open.
Sure.
But most of them will close.
Well, and now, I mean, it's if you don't like it, send it back. The return policies are covered.
No, the label's right in the box.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's they make it as easy as possible for you to do business with you. And mm-hmm. I think that's where it can't be about, what do you want? Do you want it in red or blue? How many would you like?
Right.
That's not what it's about anymore.
Are you looking for something special today?
Yeah. What brings you into our store today? Oh, I got lost. I parked my car in the mud and I... Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so back to Jeff. So you become this sales guy, even though hesitant.
Sure.
And then start...
We're just in his story. I forgot about that.
And then what... You started a business.
Oh, well,
teaching others to sell.
There's a lot that happened between...
So, yeah, talk to us about that.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration to say, okay, I'm done selling for this company, and now I'm going to go teach others?
So there were a couple of things that happened. I was in one sales job for about 3.5 years and learned a lot. But like a lot of salespeople, I feel like I was going to benefit from a change in scenery. And so there were a lot of things that I learned. There were a lot of things I didn't like. There were a lot of things I wanted to do, but felt like I was too much into my own process to make such a change. So when an opportunity came along, I took a different job. That change in scenery allowed me to put into play a lot of the strategies that I wanted to but didn't feel that I could in my previous position. Put those things into play and they worked. So what happened was, not only was I successful in selling a lot for my company, but I was further convinced that my instincts were good and that I knew I had something to deliver. Now, I knew I was doing something differently than my cohorts and my peers. I didn't quite have the ability to put my finger on it. Fast forward about 7 years, I had the best job I'd ever had, but they're really, what was I going to do for the next 30 years? The position itself had become a little bit stale for me. There was not an opportunity for me to move up or progress. I didn't want to become a manager. I looked at what my sales managers were doing, and I'm like, thank you for doing it, because I don't want any part of what you're doing.
That's so interesting, because a lot of times the best salespeople want to become managers and then realize they were actually happier being salespeople.
And I had, I guess, the presence of mind to see that, to where some of the people that had moved on to management positions said, this isn't for me, and then went back and actually, in some cases, working in a distributor kind of a model where there are manufacturers' reps, the distributor principal would sell his business to one of his reps, and then 5 years later, come back and work for the person that he sold his business to, because I just missed it. I took an opportunity here to go into management and I lost connection, lost contact with what it was I really loved about what I was doing every day. And further validation of that was when I looked at other senior reps within my company and none of us wanted to move up. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking around and I knew I was doing something different. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I've always had an interest in teaching and in coaching and in training. And took an opportunity, came in and spent a weekend with you two, actually, a couple of years ago. And during that seminar, I realized that this wasn't something that I could do. This was something I felt I really needed to utilize. And it was the first time I was able to kind of stand shoulder to shoulder in a room with other salespeople that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew me. I didn't know them. There were no preconceived notions about who was really good, who wasn't really good. These were a bunch of people who were coming together all to do the same thing. And I looked around and I said, you know what? I belong here. And that was kind of where the seeds were planted.
That's really cool. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm so happy we were able to manipulate you to come to this.
My arm hasn't healed yet. It still comes out of socket every once in a while.
So now that you're in front of other people and sharing with them your philosophy and your strategy, and of course you use some of ours because you're licensed to do it, but what have you found that connects most with people these days versus what connected with you when you were a salesperson?
Wow, that's a really good question.
Thanks. That's, one, that's I'm why they pay me this money.
That's why your name's on the door, right? I think what is most resonant with the people I work with is that your instincts are good. If you've made a friend, you've made a sale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people, you know, who are married, and they say, look, you got this person to say yes to spend the rest of their lives with you. If you can make, if you can get that kind of commitment out of somebody, you can make this transactional sale. You can sell this software. You can sell whatever it is.
Okay, so Jennifer.
Got an inside joke over here?
It's a very inside joke.
But, I'll send you an invoice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think it's important because the world of the buyer and the world of the customer has changed significantly in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
We are used to instant gratification or Amazon Prime or finding something in 2 seconds on Google and then click into a website to find it, either comparison shop or look for something to buy without even going to the store to make a comparison. But stores have basically become showrooms now.
Right.
And in the B2B world, I'm really looking for social proof. I'm not just looking for a sales pitch and a bunch of slides to be shown at me. I want to know what other customers think.
Right.
So how does that affect how you communicate to your audiences?
Well, I think your online reputation precedes you. And so you have to be able to have something that is not only can be found, but is worth finding. Mm-hmm. And then it's your ability to refer to some of that stuff. I mean, if you've got a good enough online presence, you can actually send people there for their social proof. And, you know, it still all comes back to your ability with your own differentiating factors to provide them with something that they didn't know they could have.
So what do you say to the salesperson who says, well, my company can be found. Why do I need to be found? All they need to do is find my company. And then, you know, why?
What are you selling first?
Sell yourself. If I don't buy you, I'm not buying nothing.
And that's the thing. I mean, and in order for your company to be found, again, you're relying on someone who already knows what they're looking for. If they knew that your solution was the best, you wouldn't have a job. But ultimately, you need to prospect. You need to put yourself, your company's solution in front of these people, and you need to paint the picture for them. And prospecting is not just about calling people who might be able to buy. Prospecting is about finding people who you know you can help in a way they don't know they can be helped.
You have a whole chapter on prospecting in your ebook, Rethink the Way You Sell.
It's a short chapter, but yeah, it's actually the longest chapter in the book.
Tell us some of the strategies that you get. Don't tell us the whole chapter,
yeah,
but
you know,
give us a strategy or two that our listeners can benefit from.
I take prospecting, I take a kind of a very high level view about prospecting because, you know, the debate is going to rage on for as long as there are eyeballs regarding cold calling or social selling or even, I mean, listen, I sold, actually, if you really, you know, drill down into the way I sold, it was door to door and made a lot of sales that way because in the industry I worked in medical devices, that's how you did it.
But how did you get in?
You walked in the front door.
And then what? How did you get with the person? How did you get the decision maker?
Ultimately, though, what it comes down to is...
No, I'm serious. A lot of people say, I go in and I leave my pamphlet with the secretary or the... Mm-hmm. Are you not allowed to say secretary anymore? I don't know, the person at the front desk, okay?
Receptionist, or it's a medical assistant.
Okay,
or,
right, yeah. So I leave my pamphlet, I give my brochure, I give my card, and they never call me.
Go figure.
Right, so what did you do to get past that person?
Well, it depended on the situation. It depended on who I was actually trying to reach. And that's what I go into in the book. It's you have to know who you are and what you bring to the table. You need to know who you should be talking to and what it is that they might know or might not know that you can help them with. You also need to be the expert in your field, and you need to create a little bit of tension there. It's not about finding pain. It's about making these people aware of something that could help them accomplish a goal that they're seeking to accomplish.
It's almost like dangling a carrot in front of the rabbit to get him to run a little further, as opposed to taking the carrot away and make him look around and beg for it.
It is, but in to use that analogy, sometimes you need to educate the rabbit that carrots are delicious, and that's the where it's kind of taking it a step further.
I should tell you though, that people are looking for something to benefit themselves, not you to benefit them. They want to feel like this is all about me and I'm the most important person in the world, and your job is to frame it in that process.
Right.
So it makes it much easier for you to connect with them.
It does.
Well, it seems like that's what you're saying you would do if you were walking in cold to, you know, to try and get a meeting.
Sometimes we walked in cold. Sometimes it was warm. Debating the temperature of the room really didn't matter.
But if I walked into a medical office, I would tell the nurses there, I said, I've used this line very often. Listen, I know you run the place, but I'd like to speak to the person that thinks they do. and I get a smile out of that person, and I might be able to actually make access, as opposed to, I'd like to speak to the doctor in charge, and you're gone.
Right.
I mean, your doctor only sees people Tuesday from 10:01 until 10:02.
And you know, and there's a line of three people already.
And you better have good samples.
Sometimes the call was made in the office. Sometimes the call was made in the operating room. Sometimes the call was made at a networking event. Sometimes it was made at an operating room. Oh, I was in surgery almost every day.
Did you have to put the gloves on and stuff?
Well,
did the doctor
Not supposed to touch anything blue, right?
I don't know. I don't go in surgery rooms very often.
I've been in them, but only knocked out.
So that's another podcast. We can talk about that. No, the operating room was a lot of fun. You really get to see
it sounds
results.
Sounds like a blast to me.
Well, I mean, I was in orthopedics, so when you see someone walking in, I know you want to talk about solving people's problems. When I was selling total knee implants, when you can see someone come in their x-rays and their leg is literally crooked, and then by the time the surgery is over with, it's a well-functioning, anatomically correct, pain-free, essentially,
it's like
knee.
Humpty Dumpty. You're putting them back together.
That is exactly how I refer to trauma surgery. It's it's putting Humpty Dumpty back together again after he fell. Yeah. So,
all right,
it's
so
really, really rewarding.
You have another chapter, Why They Didn't Buy.
Yeah.
Why didn't they buy?
Well, it's different every time. And that's the point of the entire book. It's we can't just go on autopilot the entire time. It's let's think about what would make them act. Let's think about the things that we need to know in order to dig into what would make them act. And when they don't, or when they act in another direction or go in another way, why did they? Let's replay the tape. Let's go back and revisit the call. That is something that a lot of people don't do because we're so focused on these KPIs that we're given. Let's make 100 calls today. Let's send 50 emails. Let's meet this many people.
I can't understand that.
We're measuring sometimes we're measuring very effective things, but sometimes it's the wrong things that we're measuring and we don't go back and think, all right, maybe those 10 calls didn't lead to advancing the process, but why not? So that we don't make the same mistakes the next 10.
Yeah, that's the approach. Keep in mind that there's a word in sales that is automatically determines what you're talking about. The word is guy. Yeah, guy didn't return my call. The guy didn't like our product. He said he used it before. It didn't work. The guy said our price was too high. And what happens is the salesperson, when they don't make that sale, they blame the customer for not making it rather than take responsibility for what happened in that sales call and could they have made it. Is that the approach you use?
It has to be, because where I was in my geographical territory, because things are pretty restricted when you're going in on foot, right? And sometimes half of my day is spent with
an
existing customer.
Right? You got to.
Well, and But so when you've got a very finite customer base, you start to review and analyze a lot of things that go on. When you're selling software to literally a limitless amount of prospects, you don't have to think so hard about why they didn't buy, because there's a million people in line behind them that you can call. Right. Trial and error is going to go a long way at that point. But when I've got 20 people who legitimately, based on these other factors, where do we have pricing approval and where do we have, you know, thought leadership in place, and who, you know, sometimes the thought leader works for you, sometimes the thought leader works against you. Not every customer is a good customer. You know, who are these people who we think we can reasonably advance through this process to mm-hmm. get to use our product? It's not going to work the first time.
No, but I think you have to have the mindset that everyone could potentially use it.
Well,
otherwise you...
No question. Everybody could potentially use it, but when you understand why people wouldn't buy, this surgeon over here has a nephew who is her rep. I'm never breaking down that door, except maybe there's something I have that guy doesn't.
So it's not that they're not buying. They're just not buying from you.
Correct.
Well, there's a way. Buying. There's always a way.
Well, whenever there's a nephew away from the other company.
when there was a nephew involved or a family member involved, I would always say that I appreciate the fact that your nephew is involved or that your brother-in-law is involved, but isn't it really about doing what's best for the customer or doing what's best for the patient? And would it be possible for me to at least have a comparison so that you could see if one product works better than the other? And, you know, you'll still be the... that's how I do
it. But if they're sold on their nephew, just to play devil's advocate for a second, do you think that they would be so convinced that doing what's right for the customer is actually continuing to buy from their nephew?
It could be. I'm willing to take that shot, but at least give me a shot.
Oh, and it's not about not taking the shot. It's about having a reasonable expectation of what you're dealing with. And if that is a different factor that happens with that potential customer versus anybody else, you have to handle that situation a little bit differently. Again, the script does not apply to the same 3 people, 5 people, 20 mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. We have to think about the different factors. And if there is some sort of familial relationship over here, all right, we've got to be sensitive about how we talk about our company. Competition in that regard, don't mm-hmm. we? We've got to be sensitive about what makes us different, and we've got to be sensitive and put our mind in the, try to get in with the mind of the customer and, okay, in what scenario is it reasonable for me to take business away from my own nephew and still go to Thanksgiving dinner? And so then you approach it from that regard. Yeah. There's so much complaining and whining, and can I say bitching on this podcast? No.
Yes, we were rated E.
No.
you just got a big thumb. Thumbs up out there.
Exactly.
They're never going to buy, so I'm just not even going to call on them. No, you have to make the calls.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to approach those calls differently. And that's really, you know, when I say we need to rethink the way you sell, and my branding is centered around that, it's, you know, I've been called an overthinker before, but I think we need to apply thought where it is appropriate and where it's necessary in order to make any progress.
You have to be a strategic thinker as well. You cannot be a wishful thinker.
Oh, hope is not a plan.
You
have to be realistic.
Yeah, so you go to a Detroit Lions football game and you pretty much go in with a wishful thought that they
65,000 hopeful people in that
exactly.
Atlanta stadium.
Man, oh man. All right, so Jeff,
yes.
This has been great. For more, if people want to download your ebook, they're going to go to rethinktheWayYouSell.com.
Yeah,
is that correct?
rethinktheWayYouSell.com.
It takes
you to
cool.
Atlanta.
We'll put it in the show notes, but rethinktheWayYouSell.com, and you'll get the whole ebook for free.
It's totally free.
Wow, it's Jeff's gift to you.
Yeah, thank you for coming here all the way from Detroit. We'll
all
see
the way
you again
down.
Thank
next
you,
week,
Jeff.
maybe the week after. And we certainly wish you the best. Thanks for being on Sell or Die.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
It's so great to talk to somebody that actually gets it. It's
I
so
agree.
Great to talk to somebody that says, hey, there's a new way, and you better start to learn the new way and go the new way, or you're going to die the old way. And I thought Jeff Bajorek hit the nail on the head, and I thought that he did it in a way that was both professional and approachable.
I read his ebook, and
he's
a thinker. Advanced copy.
Yep.
And the ebook is great.
So
it's real great.
He's typical of the kind of guest that we're going to have on Sell or Die. So all you diehards out there, are supposed to download at least Overcast and put it on your iPhone and subscribe.
But if you don't have an iPhone and you can't get Overcast and give us a star No, it's okay.
If you don't have an iPhone, they have them at the store now and you can go get one.
Right. Or you can get our podcast
on iTunes.
On iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. We just ask that you give us a review and 5 stars.
Yeah. And subscribe. But we have a surprise guest next week. It's so surprising that we don't know who it is. But I want to make sure that each of you understand how grateful we are for you to be a diehard, and that you're following the show tremendously. Our numbers are way up. Our downloads are way up.
Yeah, and because of that, we are going to be able to keep offering the value and the content that we're
offering. High quality people.
And we are going to be able to increase our offerings to you. So stay tuned.
For more cool stuff.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, if you're a seller or diehard and you want us to talk about something on this show, email sellerdie@gittimer.com. We want desperately to hear from you.
Yeah, we're dying. If you don't email us, we're going to die. And I would greatly appreciate an email before we... Oh, wait, one came in. Okay, cool.
All right, well, we're out of time for the show.
My name is Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm inviting you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.